This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm David Salkeld. Last week was a special one as delegates across the country came together in Cleveland to put forward what many believe to be one of the most conservative GOP platforms in modern history. On Monday, the platform was adopted by the full convention and approved. What message does this platform send to those on the progressive left? Secretary of State in Kansas, who was also a Kansas delegate to the platform committee, Chris Kobach, joined Tony at the Republican National Convention earlier this week.
Chris, welcome to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you.
Hey, Chris, I know you know the platform thoroughly as we spent 2.5 days crafting it. Let me ask you, in your opinion, first, your overall analysis of the platform. How good is it?
It's great. I served on the platform committee in 2008 and 2012, and I can tell you that the 2016 platform is much more conservative than the 2008 and somewhat, well, considerably more conservative than 2012. It's the most conservative platform the party has ever had in history, and I'm very pleased with that. And on issues of faith and issues of conscience, it is really, really emphatic. And I really like the language we got in there on traditional marriage. And I'm sure you're well aware of it, but it's a platform that speaks very clearly and very specifically about what the Republican Party stands for. And I'm really pleased to be part of that process.
Now, Chris, as we work through all of these issues, both in subcommittee and then as a full committee, were you surprised at how there was such unity? I mean, there was some opposition, but it was very small. There seemed to be a very, very strong presence of a conservative ideology that was governing the platform committee.
Yeah, I agree completely. And, you know, I recall back to the 2008 platform committee meeting when we were trying to take a fairly moderate platform of 2004 and move it in a conservative direction, and there was a lot of resistance. This was completely different. I sense a very conservative platform committee. You can see it in all the votes. And as you know, efforts to water down our language on traditional marriage, on all kinds of issues, were soundly defeated. And I'm just really pleased with it.
You know, Chris, you know, the media tried to portray the Republicans as divided, that there was dissenting voices on the platform committee. I mean, I would be upset if there weren't people that had differing views, because that would say they shut people out. They were welcome to come and participate in the process. But in the end, when the votes were taken, the votes were overwhelmingly on the side of these conservative viewpoints.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, a wide range of conservative viewpoints. Not, you know, we've been talking about traditional marriage so far, but you look at illegal immigration. It's the most emphatic platform defending the rule of law I've ever seen. You know, calling for a rejection of all amnesties, calling for the building of the wall. You look at the war against terrorism, calling for the destruction of ISIS and heightened security of people coming to our country under the programs of refugees and asylum. Just go down the list, balanced budget amendment. It's a very, very conservative platform, and I would say that people will enjoy reading it. And I would not have said that in 2008. It's really, really good, and it's well written. And just to give you an example, as you know, when we talked about traditional marriage, we took the extra step of quoting the late Justice Antonin Scalia, who's never been a Supreme Court justice quoted in a platform that I'm aware of, and we quoted his dissent in the Obergefell decision, where I have it right in front of me, he said that the majority opinion reduced the disciplined legal reasoning of John Marshall and Joseph Story to the mystical aphorisms of a fortune cookie. And we just talk about how absolutely indefensible the Supreme Court's decision was with the five justices in the majority.
Well, Secretary Kobach, if my memory serves me well, I think you actually added that to the platform, did you not?
I did, and I intentionally wanted to have Justice Scalia's words echoing in our party's platform.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. You're hearing a lot of noise in the background. That's because we're broadcasting live from the Republican convention here in Cleveland, Ohio. I just stepped off the floor. I'm a delegate to the convention. And we just voted on the platform, voted on the rules. That was a little more contentious over the rules, but platform, I didn't even hear any opposition to the adoption of that. Secretary Kobach, I want to ask you this question because you're a elected state leader in the state of Kansas. What importance does this party platform have to local elected officials and local party individuals?
I think it has immense importance for a couple of reasons. One is some of the issues discussed in the platform are issues of state government and even local government. It's mostly national issues, but there are some about what we believe state governments should do, what they should be able to do. So, for example, things like concealed carry law, perfect example of a state law supported by the platform. So you can measure, a person can take the party platform and, you know, ask their candidates for state office, do you believe what the Republican Party platform says? And that's probably the most important overall purpose I see. There are so many people, especially in parts of the country where I come from, like Kansas, where to be a Republican is pretty essential in some districts if you want to get elected. And so we see a lot of people who are very liberal and who would be a Democrat in an eastern state pretending to be a Republican in a state like Kansas. And the platform allows the voter, allows a journalist, allows an existing primary candidate to say, hey, look, this is what the Republican Party stands for. I believe it. My opponent does. That's such an important purpose of this platform. You know, look, if I'm running for city council or something like that, and yet they're calling themselves a Republican, but then they can be asked, hey, do you believe in this and this and this in the platform? So I think it's important to hold elected representatives accountable, and the platform helps us do that.
Yeah, I think that without question it does that, but it also encourages elected officials, whether they're on the school board, whether on a local town council, that look, hey, the principles that we fight for and we believe in here at the local level are mirrored in this party platform, and it in many ways affirms them in their stand for these conservative principles that are still widely held at the local level.
Yeah, I agree completely, and the other thing the platform does is I would even go so far as to say it educates. If a platform is written in vague, flowery platitudes, it doesn't really mean a whole lot. It can mean whatever you want it to mean. But our platform is pretty specific, and it's well written. And so I would venture to say that a lot of people listening to this broadcast, if they open up a page of the platform and start reading, they will actually find it interesting, and they'll probably find some facts and statistics or information that they didn't know. It's a really good read, and I've never said that about a platform before.
That's true, and I think it's been more specific than in the past because of the problems we're facing, because of the policies of the Obama administration. And so many areas of the platform specifically addresses the policies and the fallout that we have seen over the last 7.5 years as a result of Barack Obama.
That's exactly right. It really does. And the platform goes straight to the point and says, what was done here was wrong, and here's how we would do things differently as a Republican Party.
Secretary Chris Kobach of Kansas, thanks so much for joining us in great work helping shape the party platform, something I think conservatives can be proud of.
And right back at you. You did great work on the platform committee, and it was a real pleasure working with you.
You can find out more about Kansas Secretary of State Kobach when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we return, Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant will be with us. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch.
What's at stake at this election? A lot. From the freedom to publicly practice and proclaim your faith, to the nomination of Supreme Court justices, matters of critical importance to Christians are looming in the days ahead. Family Research Council and FRC Action stand at the forefront of this battle. In these turbulent times, we trust in God's Word that He is for us and that He will give us a future and a hope of prosperity. That's why we invite you to join us on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. for the Values Voter Summit. Come to learn, be encouraged, and meet others who will stand for the renewal of this great nation. you'll hear the latest on the threats to our nation's security, your religious freedom, the privacy and safety of our children and grandchildren, and much more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to register. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. It's been a big week for the GOP as several political leaders came to Cleveland for the 2016 convention. One of those leaders is taking the fight for religious freedom to the top of the agenda. Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant joined Tony at the Republican National Convention on Wednesday.
Governor, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, Tony, thank you. And thanks for having me on. I always enjoy the show, enjoy listening, and enjoy being part of it. And love being at your lunch today.
Well, you did a great job in kicking us off as we had several governors, some senators, congressmen talking about these values issues. I don't know. I want to ask you, from my perspective, I see a lot of upbeat conservatives here in Cleveland. But I want to get your sense as you have moved around from delegation to delegation, event from event. What are you sensing among Republicans?
Absolutely. It is the conservatism. Only if I can use that, it is more value-based. There are individuals who have not been politically active in the past. In our own delegation here in Mississippi, many of them, this is their first convention. They've never run for office. But they are worried about America. They're worried about the values of this country disappearing. They're seeing attacks on this nation not only by terrorists, but attacks on our police and law enforcement. They're seeing the President of the United States blame the police for much of this. And so they're concerned enough to use their own financial support to come to the National Convention and being a part of this. But I agree with you. There is a new conservatism that I am seeing with people who are now politically active who have not been in the past. They are off the sidelines. And they are in the game. And look at the turnout you had. As you said, governors, I think Rick Perry spoke right before me, congressmen that you were introducing that were in the crowd, that is a sign of the impact that the value summit, that the value platform is having on elected officials in Washington, and thank goodness you are.
Well, I appreciate that, Governor, as you look at these individuals you just described, and I saw the same thing in my involvement in the platform committee. Is this because Barack Obama has been so committed to driving a liberal agenda that has moved us so far from the center that people are now pushing back?
I think that's certainly the largest part of it, but they've also seen this administration devalue human life. Basically, just up to this administration, there would be no protection, zero for the unborn, is very little, if any, now. But he's devalued that life. He has abandoned our military. I was in Afghanistan in April, and I can tell you they're doing all that they can to barely hold on there in Iraq and in Afghanistan. They've seen the unrest at home. Racial relations are the worst that they've been since the 1960s. They're seeing a general population that is being incentivized not to work. More social programs are being added every day. The businesses are being attacked because they are successful. So everything that this president, when he came in and said he was going to fundamentally change America, he's done just that. And they realize that our children and our children's children must have values, must have the same freedoms and opportunities that was America, that still can be America in this shining city on the hill that we live in. And I believe that altogether, the Obama agenda, which will also be the Hillary Clinton agenda, double down, is the reason that they are so emotionally involved in this process.
I want to ask you this question because I know this, because I earlier in the program described in my personal capacity, I supported Ted Cruz in the primary, and I know you did as well. you are now supportive of Donald Trump. And I want to ask how you came to that decision after Ted dropped out of the race, that you, not just passively, but you have been aggressively supporting Donald Trump.
Absolutely. I came to it immediately, Tony, because I realized at that point, he's a nominee. So it would be a simple choice, actually, between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And Hillary Clinton would be a disaster for this nation. She would appoint three, at least, maybe more Supreme Court justices that would have an effect on this country for the next 40 years. We will not recognize America after those judges are appointed and after she exercises the administrative authority she will have as President of the United States to the great detriment of the thing that you and I believe in and hold sacred and destroy the Constitution. I know what this woman is capable of doing. I've seen what the Clintons have done to America over the last 30 years. So immediately I realized that Donald Trump could surround himself with really good men. Mike Pence is a dear friend of mine. He and Karen are friends of ours. And he is a godly man that will stand next to Donald Trump. He has a team of rivals, if you will. If he begins to look at those that ran against him that now will be supporting, Ted will be speaking tonight as a potential appointment in a very important position. Now, he can do have a remarkable effect on America's future in a way that we would appreciate. Well, Hillary Clinton will do all that she can to continue what Barack Obama has started. So it didn't take me but a moment. I tweeted out that night, as soon as Ted dropped out, that I'd be supporting Donald Trump, and I'm doing so enthusiastically, and I believe we're going to win this campaign.
You can find out more about Governor Bryant when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we return, Eric Metaxas joins us with his take on the Republican National Convention. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch. The family is the heart of our economy. It is the greatest generator of knowledge, attitudes, skills, and habits of the individual, and is a generator of financial savings and capital. The vast majority of small businesses begin as family businesses, which eventually become the large businesses of the nation. Families are thus the great generators of business, and they are affected profoundly by the tax code. What Washington does to the family budget has a direct effect on the well-being of millions of moms, dads, and children. Given the importance of family economic well-being and the sluggishness of economic growth, Family Research Council proposes five short-term but productive actions that federal policymakers can take to help moms and dads better provide for their children through tax reform. To learn more about our family-friendly tax proposals, visit frc.org/taxes. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. As Christians, we must take part in the political process, and now is not the time to sit back and let others take this country further away from being one nation under God. And New York Times bestselling author and radio host Eric Metaxas joined Tony at the Republican National Convention on Thursday to talk about the importance of participating in elections.
Eric Metaxas is my guest. Eric, welcome back.
Well,
back
it's
to
always
Washington
great
Watch.
To be. It's always great to be on your show. The chaos of this, this whole thing. It's sort of a wonderful kind of chaos.
Aren't
but
you,
it is.
You feel right at home, don't you?
I feel energized.
Oh, you do. Okay. Christians have an obligation to vote. That's a statement from you. You said.
Yeah.
You remember saying that?
Of course, I've said it many times.
Well.
And by the way, I stole it from Chuck Colson.
And I agree with it. But we have a lot of folks. We talked about this yesterday in the program, and I'm sure when I open up the phone lines, we're going to be talking with some other folks this afternoon.
Yep.
Who, given the choices before them, are not certain if they're going to participate in the process this fall. Eric Metaxas, what do you say?
I think they're making a tremendous mistake. I think people have exaggerated the trouble of Trump. In other words, I don't think Trump is a George Washington. I don't think he's a Billy Graham. But I do think he loves his country. I do think he understands that we have to get serious in terms of our military, in terms of our borders, in terms of protecting our sovereignty. I think he understands that we've done a terrible job with trade deals. He understands a lot of things that need understanding, and I also get the impression that he has the appetite to attack these things and to actually deal with them, as opposed to doing what Washington typically does, which is talk about it a lot and then at the last minute lose courage and do nothing. So I think that you have to give him some credit. I also think he fundamentally understands that the Supreme Court can wreck America forever if we do not appoint people who are constitutionalists and originalists to the court. So the Supreme Court right now is so important. People don't seem to understand that you can have 4 years, 8 years of a president. You're going to have 30 or even 40 years, potentially, of the next Supreme Court nominees. I mean, we had Scalia was nominated in 86, and he just passed away at the relatively young age of 79. I don't understand why people don't understand that that is what William F. Buckley would say, dispositive, that this is going to affect whether we have judicial activism. Our friend Chuck Colson talked about judicial activism. It's very, very serious. And so you can have a lot of trouble with Donald Trump, but you're going to be electing Hillary Clinton if you don't vote for Trump. I don't see any way around that.
Let me just walk you down the path of some of the questions. You know, I agree with you. We know what Hillary Clinton is going to do if she has the opportunity to place justices on the court. No question. Some people say, well, we don't know what Donald Trump's going to do. How would you respond?
Well, I would say that whatever Trump's going to do, it's going to be infinitely better than what Hillary's going to do. I mean, listen, you don't have to hate Hillary. You don't have to hate Trump. You just have to be a realist. She wants to appoint people like Sotomayor and Ginsburg. Ginsburg has been vocal about her affinities. That's what you're getting. So if you do not vote for the person running against Hillary Clinton, then it is inevitable you're participating in that kind of a situation. I think a lot of times Christians in particular, they want to be theologically pure, and that's not the way this world works. Jesus came, he was incarnated into a dirty world. We need to get down in the dirt sometimes to do God's work. And I really think if you care about America, it means you have to vote for somebody who would not be your first choice. And you have to take that seriously.
Well,
I'm not saying this is George Washington.
But we only have the choice of two people.
That's my point.
And so the idea that somehow we just shouldn't participate in the process, this is how I see it. I see that as a violation of the instruction to be salt and light. First off, I think we should roll up our sleeves and get involved early in the process.
Yeah.
But then secondarily, as we now have this choice, we need to make the best of it and try to influence the outcome.
Well, that's exactly what I would say. In other words, instead of picking up your marbles and running away, I think people should befriend Trump. They should try to talk to him, pray for him. Listen, God is over everything. If we pray and trust God and do our best, that's our job. That's all we can really do. But I think if we feel that we're going to be somehow pure and untainted by not voting, I think that's a fundamental mistake. I don't think anyone has ever run for president of the United States who has been anywhere close to perfect. I could go down the list. Ronald Reagan at the top of the list. He had an astrologist in the White House. He was divorced. You could go on and on and on and on. You have to make a choice. And I really am afraid the Christians will do what they did by not voting for a Mormon. You guarantee that you're going to have a hardcore liberal in the White House appointing Supreme Court justices. I'm sorry, folks, but I think that this is what we have to do.
Eric, we were together, speaking of Donald Trump, we were together a few weeks ago in New York where we, along with Bill Dallas, worked to host that event with about 1,000 evangelicals. And you were gracious enough to change your schedule to come in and actually be the concluding speaker.
Yeah.
And you spoke with a message that was somewhat along the lines of your latest book, If You Can Keep It, The Forgotten Promise of American Liberty.
Yep.
How timely is that for this election?
Well, I didn't think it would be as timely as it is. I think, as it turns out, it's outrageously timely, almost comically timely, except for the fact that God has burned this on my heart. I love my country. And why do I love my country? Not because I'm a tribalist. I love my country because this country has blessed the world. If you care about the world, if you care about world missions, if you care about people suffering around the world, you need to care about America. We've been a light unto the world. You see the Statue of Liberty holding out that torch of liberty. It is outward focused. It's a biblical idea that God has blessed us to be a blessing. For over 200 years, we have been a blessing to peoples around the world. We've invited people to come here, like my parents, who could become as American as George Washington, because it's about ideas. It's not about ethnicity. I think we've lost the love of America, the cultural elites, you know, mostly liberal cultural elites in the academy, in public schools, certainly in the universities and in the media. They've made loving your country and being patriotic and celebrating the founders something that is either passé or frowned upon. That is a grievous, grievous error. We are suffering as a result of it. We're in trouble as a nation because of that. I really think you can talk about elections all you want, and I love to talk about elections, but at the heart of it are some basic ideas. If we don't teach these ideas in the schools, if we don't talk about the greatness of America, who we are, what it means to be American, and fundamentally, what does it mean to govern ourselves? How do we govern ourselves? If you are an American, it means that you must govern yourself. That doesn't just mean staying out of trouble. It doesn't just mean not going to jail and just paying your taxes. There's a lot involved in governing yourself. If you want to be governed from above, from without, by some kind of oligarchy or by some kind of a tyrant or by a monarch or by some globalists in Brussels, you don't have to do much. But if you want to govern yourself, there's some things you need to do. And we have not been teaching our young people that. I originally called this book Letters to a Young American, and then I realized, no, people my age and younger have not right. learned this in the schools. This is utterly vital. Virtue and faith are at the heart of the American experiment. All the founders understood it. We're not teaching that, and we're much the poorer for it.
Eric McTaxis, my guest, new book out, If You Can Keep It, The Forgotten Promise of American Liberty. Eric McTaxis, thanks so much for being with us.
God bless you. Thank you, Tony, for what you do.
To find out more about Eric's new book, If You Can Keep It, head over to TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.